down to brass tacks.
Hello, David.
Yes.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm well, and you?
No, I'm good. I'm seeing that the Attorney General saying he wants to leave it up to people to turn in people. In other words, he wants whistleblowers.
Yeah.
But I have a different idea on that. The new legislation that they're bringing, the integrity legislation, I think they need to put entrapment legislation inside there. There must be some kind of, if you don't have entrapment legislation inside that bill, you're wasting time. You must put entrapment legislation. Somebody got to have a little bit of fear about doing certain things. And without entrapment legislation, like the Americans had to do, you can't catch nobody nowadays. Look here in Barbados, that lady that working at the ICBL, she only testified because of fear of America coming after she and promising not to do nothing. But she could have, that could have happened in Barbados. She could have alerted the authorities here in Barbados about that.
But you got to bear in mind that a major factor in all of this is American law is such right now that it is better for you to inform the Americans when something has gone wrong in your institution, your financial institution. Because if they are the ones who come in and check and discover it, the fines are horrendous. So companies have a motivation to make sure that they put that information before the Americans first. And I think that in all of this discussion about who was responsible for providing the information and all of that, at the end of the day, we have FATCA and all sorts of things that we now have to conform to. And that is going to influence that.
What do you think about putting entrapment legislation inside that bill?
Entrapment legislation
inside the bill? In other words, America will not catch a lot of people if they didn't have entrapment. Where you could entrap a man, you could entrap him, set up camera and do certain things, entrap him.
Well, I can't argue against a discussion about it. If you believe that it would make a difference.
It would make a difference. It would make a difference. Nowadays, how you want to get certain criminals, certain people, you have to go entrapment legislation. All this integrity bill and stuff, nothing will happen. Nothing will happen.
But you
how much people you think will come forward and blow a whistle and all that sort of thing, unless somebody stand out on the foot?
But let's talk a little bit about how the world has changed in such a way that you have more people who are vulnerable to criminal activity, financial transactions, and corruption. I mean, you would accept that over the years, we have had more of a drive to measure success by house, land, car, and academic success, how many times you cruise in a year. You know, the trappings of success have become very important for many people. But you've also seen, like, in a country like this, you've seen change where it's become harder to live for some people. Middle-class people in Barbados, for instance, have seen their lifestyle touched in one way or the other, more negatively than positively for most people. But the aspirations are still there. So you have all these aspirations and you can't satisfy them. And in addition to everything, there are a lot of people who love to show off to the rest of the society. You must have a certain type of car. You know?
Listen,
the size of your house.
Exactly how every case that goes to court going to turn out.
Mm.
we in Barbados, we know exactly, the average person in Barbados will tell you exactly how every case can turn out in Barbados. Look at those guys with the marijuana on the board, bringing in marijuana. Before the case, those two white guys and the other guy, people tell you exactly what's going to happen. I mean, if it was two other people, they would have said something completely different. But they tell you straight from behind us, they know how that going to turn out. The people in Barbados know exactly how it's going to turn out in Barbados, because this body knows this body, and you're white, and you got a certain position, and you're known, and stuff like that. You can't go. Certain things ain't going to happen. We already know what's going to happen. But we need to put, in that legislation that I tell you about, we need to put entrapment in there and leave it out the hands of the politician. It should be between a judge and the commissioner of police and his investigators and things like that.
If somebody says to me here that everybody is forgetting that Donville Innes is a U.S. permanent resident, if anyone applies for a residency, they have to abide by the laws of that country. The matters on which he was convicted.
You think that he's a resident of America?
Hold on. You say the matters which he was convicted of are serious matters in the U.S. He's expected to abide by their laws. Mm-hmm. The argument that it wouldn't be investigated in Barbados is totally irrelevant. Now, let me ask the question. And
was he charged?
Aren't they serious?
Was he charged in the United States for bribery?
Yeah, but the question is:
it was bribery or money laundering?
Conspiracy to commit money laundering right. $16,000 and laundering $20,000 dollars.
I understand, but is that bribery? Those charges bribery? He had nothing to do with bribery. Happened in Barbados.
Right, so the question...
The money laundering happened in the United States, and that's what you get charged for.
The bottom line is that there are allegations about what happened at the Barbados end, and therefore, the question is, if the United States can take the action that it took on the basis of something that happened in Barbados, why is it that at the Barbados end nothing is done? That's where I suggested that the embarrassment exists.
Yes, it's hard from Barbados. We live in a 2x4 and everybody know everybody.
Right.
And
okay.
The body don't want to carry the body, and when something happens, I mean, the things that happen in Barbados and people get away with, but it's really a 2x4 country.
Yeah.
And this year really shows us up. And that means we got to change. Things got to change. People expect, if there's one fundamental thing that people like and they don't get in Barbados, and they say this all the time, that they want justice, and they want to see it fair. They don't want to see that I steal a bottle, and I get 10 years, and a man steals 10 bottles, and he goes home.
What you don't take into consideration, though, is that there's a lot of sentimentality in Barbados, though, you know. You know how many things turn more on sentiment than on what is right or wrong?
But that's because people know one another, and that guy that taught you just
even if they don't know each other. Let me tell you something.
Do good. He do good.
Right.
He did good sometimes. He did some good, and something happened good. Now he can bring up how good he do and things like that. That's a sentiment. Yes, I understand that. That's it. That's what people.
You may have a person.
That's because we're a small country.
I don't know if it's because we're small or that's being a small country. You have people sometimes that you don't really know, and the person may be working in a job. That job, they're not doing a good job. And when you start to discuss what needs to be done, you will hear an argument that says, but the person got 3 children. You know? And the decision that you need to make in the interest of the organization, then it turns on whether the person got children or not.
And just using the courts every day, Mr. Ellis, for the lawyers. This man do something, he wants some bail. The man see man got two little children. He got a little children. This time the man don't even see, he ain't let see that children the last 2 years. And all of a sudden, the lawyer telling the judge, he got two little children. I need some bail for this man. He got, you know, it is also using courts.
I want you to say, I would want you to listen to this particular contribution here. This person says that, to my mind, all of this talk directed towards the Attorney General in light of recent murders is, to me, misdirected. Is there this strong direct correlation between killings and the AG not doing his job at all? Instead of these callers saying that the AG should do his job, I would want them to proffer suggestions as to what should be done that they can see is not being done. The cause of the increase in murders is multifaceted. It is not just a function of crime fighting. It is a function of a lack of parenting. What is allowed to come into the home, drug-wise, the internet, cell phones, YouTube, etc. Not to mention the decrease in values and decrease in Sunday school attendance that have built the character of this society for so many decades. This is a function to a great extent of us, not the Attorney General. It is time to look inwardly, man, says the writer. What do you think?
Well, what he's saying is true, but the Attorney General have a job, and his job, that comes under his job. He's supposed to do his best.
But your problem
crime,
is that sometimes...
As much crime as you could. And yeah, if wanting and working, look, the thing that I say in papers this morning about the things in port, these X-ray machines, do something like that. Do other stuff. You got to start... We need intelligence now. We need a little bit more intelligence in Barbados, not just an open police force. You need some intelligence, people who would be moving from inside, who would know what some of the gangsters doing. You need some intelligence. That's what the Americans do. They have to get intelligence. You've got to get people inside the ring. So do something. Do something. You're right. The Attorney General. You just can't say it's my fault.
The problem I have with some of the emphasis is that you are putting sometimes so much emphasis on that you can ignore the other elements that are so vital. Because the Attorney General must do something, but the Attorney General or the government of Barbados does not have all of the answers to this problem.
But you've got to tackle it from different angles.
Let me ask you then. And who else is supposed to be part of the fight?
The society itself have to tackle this from every angle. The child care board, this board, and the next board. You have to tackle it from all angles. The Attorney General is the only guy at the top. He's the fella up there that's dealing with the police. So naturally, people are going to be looking at him. But we got to deal it from a lot of angles in order to deal with this thing. Anyhow, I gotta go. Have a good day, bro.
Okay, thank you very much. this person here says, and this is consistent with what I told the earlier caller, that ICBL shareholder was required to report the matter of the discrepancy that was highlighted, to report it under the anti-money laundering law and regulations. ICBL's shareholder would have been BF&M in Bermuda. So this talk about, oh, this person from Barbados send this and try, because somebody else there suggested to me that somebody who had links to the Barbados Labour Party was responsible for it. But my recollection was that it was initiated from the Bermuda end. I remember seeing that in the early reports. The person points out that if BF&M, that's the shareholder in Bermuda, didn't report it, they would have been guilty of a crime themselves and would have been severely punished by the U.S. So, I mean, that's a very significant point you need to take into consideration here. Yes, down to brass tacks. Good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon.
Yes, welcome.
Thank you. Roger has been calling.
Yes, Roger.
Right, I wanted to share for the last 2 days now in regard to what some new updates I would like parents, especially who are listening to understand, right? We have a situation now where a lot of our young people are getting involved in two known gangs. I think that we should mention them because if a parent hears, then the parent would know, you know, well, my child might be in danger in terms of joining gangs or whatever. So we have the Choppers and we have the Jenners, which is becoming very big.
The Choppers and who?
Choppers. The Jenners.
Jenners.
Okay. Yeah. And they're every secondary school in Barbados, the Five Generals, we got that as well. So there's so much different other gangs, but right now the ones that to watch for are the Jenners and the Choppers, which is located in every secondary school and now creeping into our primary school in every district. Now they're separated within our country because this thing is about territory, all right? And they both have different signs that you can identify who they are, all right? However, now what I find is strange increasing in our gender gangs is that guys who are leaving school without any qualification, any job whatsoever, but going out there on the streets are upgrading the what it was when it was years ago. In other words, they're now using guns and then they're renting guns, they're now selling guns, and some of them have become assassins. Okay? So when we have, you see all this information, you know, and the gentleman just talked about how can we get this thing solved. Everybody needs to work together. I know they call me an alarmist. I didn't understand that. But I have the information from the horse's mouth. The police has the information as well. And is that everybody has to work together to solve this problem. And I think the issue is that parents need to be more focused on the children, recognize the signs when they're changing.
What should they look for?
Get them some help.
What should they look for? If I'm a parent, mm-hmm. what kind of age group should I be concerned about, and what is the behavior that I should be looking at?
Okay, so for instance, they're now from primary school age. So for instance, the child hits 10, 11 years old, you got to watch out with the friends that he's keeping. All right. Now, if all these friends are wearing these tight, I mean, they too tight pants. I talk about baby pants. I talk about a pants you'll put on for your baby that is so tight that the boy, I mean, everything is printed out. All right, it's very, very tight. And these young men are walking about Bristol like this, and you can identify them as gentlemen, okay? Choppers are a little bit more not identified as how they were supposed to be because mostly they're the ones that were pilfering the guns and the knives and the cutlasses and those kind of things and using violence as a means to enter the gang, right? But when the behavior changes, for instance, you try to come home now and say, yo, mommy, or we're going on, mommy. Or the language starts to change to be more gang cultured in the sense of, you know, you ain't saying hello, mommy, yo, mommy, what's going on? You know, you're starting to use the slang of the gang. Then those are also indications. Find out, look at the Facebook page, look at the Instagram page. Those are also identify what's going on.
Most of them, right? Most of them with the fingers up in the air.
Exactly. Yeah. And you can identify them. But I think parents will be more observant, will pick these things up. So let me show you, for instance, I have a lot of youngsters kind of my program now because parents identify certain things and they're getting the help that is necessary.
All right, but you
we started a program.
When you say look at the Facebook page, what do you see on that Facebook page that could stand out?
Well, you can see, you'll see for sure the mention of the Jenners or J's or the stars, look for stars. Look for graffiti in terms of maybe Thug for Life, Gangs for Life. Look at the fact that your child might only want to wear one certain color all the time, or they have their Facebook page having gang people smoking. You name it. Just look for antisocial behavior that you know is not the norm for your home or that you didn't teach your child. Those are indications. Whether the child in a gang or not, if you're seeing things that might got you a little concerned, it's best to go and get now. There are many counseling facilities across the nation that have been recently opened up, opened a long time ago. There's no way a parent should not be able to get some kind of help. You yourself might not be the person that can help that child. You might need a third-party individual. And that's what we've been trying to encourage parents to do. Don't mind why, but it could be a small little sign. It could be a small little behavior issue. Get the help, get the child some help in the early. You know, we have this program now in the schools called Level Up. And I mean, we go there directly to deal with gangsters, deal with those who are in gangs and those who infiltrate in terms of violent behavior. And so far, we've been reaping tremendous success. And the issue is that, you know, the schools, the Ministry of Education is doing a fantastic job now in tackling this problem. So what other people saying nothing happening, there are things happening beyond the scenes. But it's just that when you start to cover one sore, another one comes up somewhere else. But these sores are being covered. The Ministry of Education is working tremendously hard. And I can definitely say I beg up Minister Bradshaw in reaching out to other agencies to get the help that is needed.
You say that many people consider you to be an alarmist.
Yes.
Now, how have you been able to deal with that, to counter that?
Well, it's been extremely hard because when this first thing came about gangs, I was one of those ones that came out first to talk about it. Thank God, because we talk about the Crips and the Bloods, they went under hiding, they dismantled, and we reached tremendous success. But there are some people who, again, did not like the fact that I was, even politicians who said in Parliament, literally in Parliament, that I am an alarmist. That's what the politicians said. And I'm glad that you made the point on your show in regard to the fact that sometimes these politicians might themselves be, you know, wrapped up in these things. And my research tells me that. Yeah, my research tells me that. But we've been working so hard. I tell you, we still began the success. I'm very happy to say that we've reached tremendously great success, especially with the Level Up program, where we had gangsters who were against each other, hugging one another and saying, look, yeah, I'm praying one another and say, yeah, we're done with this. We finished. Let me sponsor and we school work. So these are kind of success stories that we have. And these are the things that we want. But as I say, when you say you start one problem, oh, another one comes someplace else. So we're going down. We're not going up to the other place that had the issue to see what we can do also to start.
So what are we going to do with the Jenners and the Choppers now?
Well, I think to dismantle them will come about from parenting, because as long as a child is more influenced to join the gang, so for instance, a mother or father who speaks to the child has to be more convincing than the person who is out there trying to get the child into the gang. So how do a parent become more convincing? Spend more time with the child, encourage the child, motivate the child, be that child's not only best friend, but balance it in terms of also being a parent. These kind of things help to dismantle gangs. But when you have parents not checking carefully and a child who's hungry when the day come home, and a gangster say, my listen, big man, I can start you out, my dog, I can start you out, my nigga, I can start you out, and give the boy food, so let his boy join the gang, and the mother don't know until late when police either knock the door or some shooting takes place. So parents need to be responsible. This only can be, listen, I don't care how much the attorney general tries to do as much as he can. The attorney general will try his best. The police can try their best. But the major problem to this, the solution to this issue is the parenting. And the parents taking the time and the opportunity to groom the child properly and spend more time with the child than the gangsters.
How big a problem would you say we have?
I'm telling you, it is massive. It is so massive that I'm fearful now that these gangs are now being a little bit more technological, so they're now advancing to the different means of contact to one another to meet the telecommunication, and they're sending information even at school to other gangsters, and the assassin is my major issue. The assassins, men who training to kill men for money. We now got this kind of situation. Men could earn thousands of dollars. I had a bounty on my head as well. A man put on his drug lords, put $5,000 on my head. And I mean you got assassins out there.
And what happened? How long ago was that?
That was a long time ago. That's when we actually first started the gang and talking about the gang culture and stuff. I actually bring up the presentation to the fore. You know? But we have assassins now that youngsters were being trained because they're not working. And obviously men have to eat. Some fellas got children, you know, some youngsters who are in drug culture and these gangs got children to support, they got to feed each other. and not getting the jobs, because when they go to the places for jobs, there are no jobs available, and things are getting rough. So you can imagine how things get rough. Who you expect the youngsters who leave school without anything and can't get a job? They go to these farms to get money, and there are drug lords up there who have some massive houses, who have some big jobs, who are very well-known people, who have to support their lifestyle, and they're not going to back down for that lifestyle, but they're going to groom other youngsters to make money for them. So they're driving around big Land Rovers and big Mercedes and BMWs and looking for young people themselves to train. So when a mother don't focus and that child bring home death and shooting and all kinds of things at their home, then they're shocked because they didn't check in before. This problem is a parenting issue. They're not other issue. This is the parenting issue.
All right. Well, I thank you for taking time. There are a lot of people who have heard about you from time to time, but your background is what again? You had actually...
Right, my background...
Expand right, on that to me.
Right, so my background from young, I was on drugs, went to prison. I went to Teen Challenge Program, came out, certified myself as a counselor, then a life coach, then I went for training as a gang interventionist. Probably one of the only ones on Barbados trained. And so I do counseling now. My office is in Robert Street in Bridgetown. And my job, my total job, is to see young people move from mere existence to purpose. That is my complete purpose in life, you know, to see these young. And I'm so happy that we got fellas that used to be on drugs and in gang, you know, police officers, defense force officers, nurses, a lawyer came from our program, teachers. So we got guys that have fulfilled the purpose and out there doing it. You know, because we ain't about long talk. People talk a lot of foolishness. I am about work. If we had listened a long time ago, put things in place, we want to see these kind of things that we have in our parents need to step up. And that's why you say lock them up.
If you found yourself in a situation where there's a parent out there who is troubled right now by behavior coming from a child, who could that person call now?
But they could call my office at 435-8148. We are also in the phone book on the drug education and counseling services. You have Ambrose Carter, who's out there, Amar Parliament Center. There's Corey Lane. There's Corey World. There's Imran Richards. There's so much.
There are a lot of people out there.
There are a lot of people, loads.
Is there a website? Is there a website where you could go to and see all of the numbers for these people?
I wish.
So that needs to be done, right?
Yeah, that needs to be done. And that would be a great idea. That would be a really great idea. That way, you know, your parents will have one area that they can go and find any service they want. That's a very good idea. Maybe one that donors over there can look at and build a website to help parents. That's a good idea.
Perhaps the ministry itself may be able to assist with that, because it will be helpful for them to, you know, people need to know. Sometimes when you're caught with these situations, you don't know where to turn.
And so right, I agree.
Know, and for all that, all the information that is available out there, sometimes it doesn't get to the people. And some more work needs to be done in that regard. I want to thank you very much for calling and sharing your views with us. Down to Brass Tacks.
Hi, David.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm okay.
I just want to make two quick points. I heard Arthur, I think it is, insinuated earlier that someone here gave the authorities in America information on Mr. Innes.
Yes, he did.
Right. And so what? So even if someone gave the information to them, so what? Is it wrong? Was it wrong to do it?
So he is implying that.
I don't see anything wrong about it. Anyhow, the other one I want to ask you. I haven't heard anyone mention the young lady who is the CFO of ICBL. Now, let me ask you a question now. If you were hiring an accountant, would you hire that young lady?
She sounded quite forthright and, you know, professional as far as I am aware.
Okay. But ethically, I think she's going to find it very difficult
to find
employment. I'm curious. I do believe that.
Well, you know, you've got to come back to the picture that was painted in the case. The picture that was painted was the place was being run with an iron fist. Okay.
By autocrat, yeah.
Yes. And it was a question of do as I say. That was the picture that was painted.
But if you were in her position, David, would you do that or would you?
Well, you know,
send your resignation. If someone asks you to prepare invoices for something that you know.
No, come on. She made the point that she queried the particular payment because she knew that Mr. Innes was a politically exposed person and was told by the CEO that she had addressed the matter at a higher level and everything was fine. Now, in those circumstances, what's the alternative approach that she could have adopted? You tell me. Resign?
Well, I read that one too, that she said that the other Innes told her everything was fine. I agree with that. But I still
right, because that if you know, come on, you're working with your CEO, all right? And your CEO gives you an instruction and an assurance. You would, generally speaking, you would expect that would be correct. Unless you had a previous experience with the CEO to suggest that that person might not be telling the truth.
I agree with you in that circumstance that she was following what she was told. I agree with that. But I'm only asking you, would you hire her if you were hiring an accountant?
I see no reason based upon what was put before us.
I just wanted to know.
I don't think
you know, in this whole scenario, right? I have not heard one person say yet that they don't believe the charges against Ms. Innes. I have not heard one person say that yet.
Well, you know, from this distance, we have had to go by the evidence that was put before the court. And if you listen, if you read what was said today by his attorney to Tony Best, you would see that it was not considered to be an easy case for Mr. Innes. I mean, he's setting out to appeal. The guilty verdict didn't come as a surprise to me. It is very difficult for a person from a foreign country. The idea of bringing someone from a foreign country and trying him or her in a U.S. court makes it very difficult for American jurors to judge behavior when they aren't aware of the system and the culture of the country.
But David, this takes me back now to what Guy Samir said a few days ago. If this case was being tried in Barbados, it would be tossed out. So what does that say about that?
Well, I think there were two issues here. There's issues of an allegation of bribery was one. And then there was the question of money laundering. Now, you see that there is accounts on money laundering that Mr. Innes has been found guilty. And I really do believe that this case throws up an interesting debate and question about how things are done here, how protected we are, the public, that is, and to what extent is the system structured in such a way as to protect the public interest or to protect the interests of a smaller group of people? I expect that this is a discussion that should involve the political class. It must involve the legal fraternity. It must, for sure, involve the legal academic fraternity in Barbados.
But David,
if not the wider Caribbean as well.
But David, you remember a few years ago a guy was sent to prison for stealing a salt, right? You remember that?
Yeah.
65 cents.
The law has long been like that. People have over the years been sent to prison for stealing limes and all sorts of stuff.
But how could you come and then tell me that something like this would be tossed out if it was in Barbados? How could you come and tell me that?
Well, you know, that's one person's opinion. The reason why matters go to court is because lawyers disagree. There's always another perspective on how things are structured legally. So we perhaps need to be part and parcel of the process of generating some fuller examination of that by bringing people who are specialists in the field together to discuss the pros and cons.
I'm going to say no, and I want to say that I agree with the Mr. Dale Marshall. If they're going to hire a firm to look into any corruption, whether it be last year, year before, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, something needs to be done, because it has put this country in jeopardy. It has put my grandchildren in debt, to be paying debt upon debt for years, and something needs to be done about it, and it's about time it starts. Because whenever it is said and done, it is we, the taxpayers, are burdened with all of this, whether it be Mr. Innes, whether it be the CFO, whether it be, but we're the taxpayers that we're paying through our eyes for years to come. You said something earlier about the middle class are the ones who are affected. They are affected because they're the ones who take the bulk of the burden. So I'm glad that something is being done about it now, and I hope that even this set that is in charge of this country now, make sure that you all do what you all were put there to do, so that when you all leave office, you would not have to be looking over your shoulders and wondering and who is coming after you all, because it will come someday. They're not going to be in office forever. Yeah. Somebody else is going to run this country. And remember that what you all are doing now, somebody else will be looking to do down the road. So keep your all hands clean and look after the interests of the country. Thank you, David.
Thank you. Let me tell you, those of you who like to travel to the United States wouldn't necessarily like this news, but JetBlue, the first major airline to bump check bag fees up to $30, is at it again with a twist, according to USA Today. The New York-based carrier has raised the fee for a passenger's first check bag from $30 to $35, and for the second bag from $40 to $45, according to the airline's baggage fee chart. There's a way to avoid the increase. Pay online in advance. Discount airlines, including Spirit, there were the three of them that they've mentioned, already offer bag discounts in advance, but JetBlue is the first major carrier to do so. Okay, down to brass tacks. You on the air? Hello?
Yeah, Mr. Ellis?
Yes, sir.
Yes, I want to get who are you, but something really important what a lawyer do to me.
Oh, my goodness.
Today, sir? I got a first, and it waited 4 years, and I was to get my paper for Christmas, my mother house papers.
Mm-hmm.
And he waited now to call me to tell me he can't work for me no more.
Oh, dear. I don't know the background to that.
Yeah, I got everything. I want how do I get hold to you to tell you about it?
What be it? If you tell me about it, what you want to achieve, you want me now to step in between you and the lawyer, or you want me to come and tell the public of Barbados about your plan?
Yeah. That's because what you do to me ain't right. You tell me before Christmas, I will get my document, the papers, from my mother's house.
But why would he come to the position and tell you that he doesn't want to work with you?
Because my wife said, and the woman that says she married to me, tell me.
No, he's the woman that says she married to you. She ain't your wife.
Yeah. You all right. Tell him that why she he don't want she come with me when he didn't talk to me.
So there's a lot more to this than meets the eye. But why you before you go any further, why you describe her as the woman that says that she married to you?
They told me married.
But
right. To be married.
But you don't have a good relationship.
Yeah. But what happened there now? He don't want nobody come with me. Then he ain't gonna talk to me.
No, you know what? This isn't a matter that we could pursue on air. This is something that we would have to talk about off the air.
Yeah, I would do
the best that I can. You stay on the line and the and leave a number.
Okay.
With the producer, and I will see what can be done. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, welcome.
Happy New Year, Mr. Ellis and the staff of VOB.
Thank you, and the same to you and your family.
I'm calling in about the polyclinic, about one polyclinic Mars Boyer.
Mm-hmm.
I went there Monday. I went as a walk, and I went to get some tablets. So I get there early, calling and get there real people that are there, Mr. Ellis. So my daughter went with me. She had the number 90. So after then, she had the number 90, Maria had to wait so long, but good luck. I get called about after one, and I went there, so.
I'm listening to you.
So then after that, I went down and came down, and so I had to stand another long time before the nurse would call me. Then she did call me, and she said today was emergency. And then I tell her, I come in to get some tablets. And she said, well, no doctor there, but I will go to. So she did. She took my blood pressure and my sugar. Written, I'm going to tell her, like, it's a big hole.
Mm-hmm.
Auto.
Right.
After then, she tell me, are you go to it? And I will see if I get a doctor to call you. Mr. Ellis, I went out there. I wanted to carry on my breakfast with me. Then after then, I tell my daughter to go down and spoke to her and both something for her to eat.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't. Miss Alice, you know about after 3 o'clock, I didn't see a doctor to write up the prescription. And then after then, both said, so I'm going to 4, a doctor called me and wrote up the prescription.
Yeah, you were there from how early?
I was there before it opened, because it opened at 8:30.
You spent a whole day in the polyclinic?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
There were other people affected by it in the same way?
I told Mr. Atlas, real people that did. Real people.
But you've been to that polyclinic before, and you didn't have that problem.
Usually I go to that polyclinic, I go by appointment.
Okay.
But I didn't want tablets, right?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't load up on tablets, so I went to get some. But I said as a walking, if like, you know, because they have walking doctors here, but not so much.
So
but my usually doctor is an evening doctor, and I get appointment to go to her.
And therefore, what your experience is teaching you is that don't walk in.
No, I'm walking, because then after that, I went to this one, you know, is to go to the dispensary. The dispensary now is where my daughter, she and another girl that we know, she had the number in, one number in between close to the one another. Huh?
Well, I want to say to you that while you did have that experience on that day because you walked in,
mm-hmm.
you have also exposed to us that generally speaking, the system that they have there can work for you as long as you go by appointment.
Mm-hmm.
If you go as a walk-in in an emergency situation, then
mm-hmm.
it has got to be a what would be seen as a real emergency. Otherwise, you're going to go through
but
exactly
Mr.
what you experience.
There with the tablets and things, if they get to number 30, it's sick there. And the man's telling you that such and such. So then after that rain, when my daughter did get to it, was about after 4. She potentially number for my tablets and things. When she get...
So your daughter was there for you, with you the entire period?
She's good with me. She's good with me. I don't want to go by myself because my foot ain't so strong.
All right.
So she went there with the man. She's gone. The man said, good evening. My daughter is.
Well, you know, as I said, I can see you're concerned about having to spend the whole day, but as you admitted, that part of the problem was that they had a lot of patients that day. And that made the difference. And you also said two positive things here. That when you set the appointment, you get through well. And on a day when we've been discussing so much that is negative. You have had a daughter who stayed with you the entire day, and a daughter who takes you to that clinic whenever you need to be there, establishing the kind of relationship that so many people have with their children in this country and their children with them. I want to leave you and leave all of you on that positive note. And I want to thank John Stout, technical operator and producer, for supporting us today. I'm David Ellis. Do have a great afternoon.